you know, it's hard to get to the various conferences and events out there that are related to Earth Ancients, lost civilizations, anomalies, both here on Earth and on other planetary systems. But you know what? I want to bring it to you. And today we are presenting the second of a series of four for the month of June Contact in the Desert presentations. Today is New Satellite Technology Reveals Lost Pyramid Science. And my guest is Dr. Manu Seifzadeh. This is a look at a new scan that was recently done of the Great Cheops Pyramid and the technology that is revealed in these scans. It is a mind-blowing program, and we're presenting the interview today with photographs that you can review on Earth Ancients Facebook. Today, part two of the Contact in the Desert program series. All this and more today on Earth Ancients. Saturday, June 10th, 2023. This is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Hey, hi. Hope you're doing well. One of the advantages of attending a conference on ancient civilizations and other topics is the fact that many times the material presented is the latest, the greatest, and cutting edge. You can't get that by reading it on the internet necessarily, even in magazines, because it's not hasn't been published yet. And my guest today is Dr. Manu Seifzadeh, author of Under the Sphinx. We had him on about a year ago. By the way, if you haven't gotten that book, Under the Sphinx, you should get it. It's forwarded by Graham Hancock. And there's also some references from Dr. Robert Schock that are quite revealing about the Sphinx. But in the program that we are presenting today, Manu reveals some new technology that was used to scan the Great Pyramid. That's the Pyramid of Cheops in Giza, Egypt. And what came back in this new technology is mind-blowing. It really is. It really changes our understanding of the pyramid being considered a tomb for a pharaoh or anything having to do with humans, and repositions it again as a machine. Now, a paper was released last August, and I didn't even know about this, August 2022, from two scientists, Filippo Biondi and Corrado Malanga, who together were able to use a satellite from the European Space Agency, one of these new high-resolution scanning satellites that has this new equipment on it. And rather than piercing the Great Pyramid with known scanning technology, this new scan used acoustic waves. And what's rendered in the imagery is a number of new rooms, a number of descending and ascending corridors, and all kinds of venting and relieving, I guess you could call them, shafts that circle the king's and the queen's chamber, that align some of these areas that we consider corridors, I guess you could call them. And what is quite amazing when you see these images. And by the way, they're going to be posted on the Earth Ancients Facebook page, is the fact that Chris Dunn is right. This is a machine. It's a very, very sophisticated machine that is highly technical. We have no idea what it was used for. By the way, Chris Dunn has a new book coming out in the fall. Chris has already agreed to come on the program to discuss it. But what his theories are may come to fruition in this new study. Now, the title of this is very technical. The title of this new scientific paper, which was in Remote Sensing Journal, is Synthetic Aperture Radar Doppler Tomography Detects Undiscovered High-Resolution Internal Structures of the Great Pyramid of Giza. Again, most of the paper is highly, highly technical. I'm still going to publish it on the Facebook page so you can see exactly what is being revealed. But more importantly, and of great importance, are these rooms that are displayed in great detail. These shafts that go deep, deep, deep under the pyramid, and what possible use, we have no clue. But this is radically new information. And I have to say this too, that the Egyptian authorities were not made aware of this, because this satellite, which is brand new, by the way, it was launched in 2019, and it's called Cosmo SkyMed, just for you, those of you who are interested. This satellite flew over 12 different times and scanned six times the exterior and six times the interior of the Great Pyramid. Now, today's program is an interpretation of the data by Dr. Sefsideh. And what we believe is, or what he believes is revealed in these pictures. Now, the paper that I'm going to post has one major photograph. They break it down into levels, but the one photograph shows the newest imaging, the tunnel above the entrance, and then a huge void above the king's chamber, well, pretty close to the king's chamber, and it gives much more detail. This big chamber had something to do with the king's chamber. We don't know how they're going to be able to verify this is the next question. It looks probably like remote sensing or a drone of some kind will be placed into the various chambers, and they can probably find it that way. But this really puts to rest the idea that this gigantic stone building pyramid is anything close to the resting place of a pharaoh or a king or a queen or somebody. It has nothing to do with death. It has everything to do with pyramid science, pyramid technology. And that's our program today, Pyramid and Engineering. Now, this is of great importance because the problem with the Egyptian Antiquities Department is they take decades to release information. And the Sky Pyramid team of the Japanese and French consortium of scientists who scanned the interior of the pyramid and discovered these two shafts, one above the entrance and one above the king's chamber, that information is slow to be released for whatever crazy reason. And I don't want to get into a conversation or criticism of the Egyptian authorities. But in today's world of the internet, iPhone, and high tech, they are really in the dark ages. And they continue to confound the scientific world in their lack of data release, number one, and number two, their level of thinking in restricting ground-penetrating radar at many of the known temples and sites, scanning technology. I think I mentioned recently that when we were over there a few weeks ago, we were told that the authorities were given free access to a very sophisticated satellite that could pierce the surface of the Giza Plateau to see what tunnel systems were underneath the surface, as well as any other anomalies that were suggested in and around the Sphinx, the Valley Temple, the Sphinx Temple, and the entire area known as the Giza Plateau. Why they rejected that is just curious. It's very, very curious. And you have to wonder what's going on here. You know, it's like, do we have to stay in the dark ages because you can't wake up? This is the problem. That's a great frustration to me. I mean, I love the Egyptian people. I love going over there, but their authorities, their ability to release data is hampered by some protocol that no one can detect. So this flyover by this new satellite is, and the data is released with or without the blessings of the Antiquities Department in Egypt. And Mohammed, my close friend, Imriam, who is the host of our tours and has been on our show and supports Earth Ancients, understands my deep frustration. And as an example, this wonderful billion-dollar museum, the Great Egyptian Museum, has been delayed and delayed and continues to be delayed to the point where now we're not even thinking about it. And if it opens, fantastic. But it continues to be delayed for some crazy reason. There's a lot of thinking that there are anomalies that have never been seen before. There's artifacts, there are statues that are going to put into question the whole thinking behind dynastic pharaohs, dynastic periods. History rocking types of data may come out, and this may be the reason why this pyramid, this museum is being delayed. That's kind of a little far-fetched, but the more it's delayed, the more we begin to question what the problem can be. And again, I've been going to Egypt for years now. We're going to be doing our fifth in 2024. And I see this reluctance to reveal the true nature of technology, of science that is left to us by perhaps the dynastics, pre-dynastics. And it does seem like there was an earlier people. I guess that's kind of classified as pre-dynastic. And who these people were, what the level of technology is, which is really showing to be quite sophisticated. And where did these guys come from? Where did this pyramid science evolve from? Because there is nowhere else in the world that has the level of sophistication. When you are up close, standing next to the Great Cheops Pyramid and the pyramids next to it, it is a sight to behold. Even in the dilapidated condition, there's no covering, there's no outer shell that is protecting the Great Pyramid. But let me tell you, when you go inside, it's right in your face. It's revealed to anyone who walks to the Great Pyramid and sits in that king or queen chamber, or goes down to the subterranean chamber and sees the base of this pyramid. So our program today, our Contact in the Desert Part 2 program, is New Satellite Technology Reveals Lost Pyramid Science. And my guest is Dr. Manu Seifzadeh. Each year, Earth Ancients heads to Mexico for a private tour of some of the most intriguing ruins from the Maya and other Mesoamerican cultures. This year, November 10th through the 17th, we'll be heading to Vera Hermosa in southern Mexico to see the site of the Olmec ruins at La Venta. This includes a visit to the world-famous outdoor museum where there are megaliths of all sizes and shapes. We then head to Palenque in Chiapas and visit this jewel of the Maya Empire with Dr. Edwin Barnhart as our host. We'll be there for 2 days, and then we head out to Bonampak, site of one of the largest murals left to us from the Maya Classic period. For more information and details on this tour, go to earthancients.com/tours, and you will see the entire itinerary and more details. This is a one-of-a-kind tour with Dr. Ed Barnhart and yours truly. For more information, earthancients.com/tours. So we're here at Contact in the Desert, and it's been a really wonderful conference. I've met a lot of great people. Great crowd for recovering, because it hasn't actually happened in 3 years, recovering from the COVID experience. And I bumped into Dr. Manu Seisudai, and I had to check in with him. He reminded me of a scientific paper on the Great Sphinx, the Great Pyramid, pardon me, that had recently come out. And I said, hey, Manu, let's get you mic'd up and talk a little bit about it. So, hey, Manu, great to see you.
Good to see you, Cliff.
How you doing? How's the conference been?
It's a circus of ideas. I love it. I mean, you got the whole spectrum. That's what this is good for me. I come here and, you know, get all these different ideas floating around. Some are great, some are not so great. But what I like about it is that you have a variety of it.
Yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. I saw you in the Forbidden Archaeology mm-hmm. with Hancock and some others. That was a full house.
That was a full house. Yeah. I was nervous, I have to tell you.
Were you?
Walking up to that stage, sitting next to Graham Hancock, yeah. Linda Moulton Howe, Brad Olson, right?
But isn't it interesting to have so many thoughts? Because Linda Moulton Howe, Graham's talking about, you know, really structured things.
Yeah, right.
Linda's talking about off-world beings. Mm-hmm. And everyone's kind of like, it's a mixed bunch, isn't it?
That's what I love about it, yeah. Yeah. So I decided, you know, I'm going to keep my answers short and, you know, not interfere with the rest of the
panel. I thought you were great. Well, look, I want to talk about this new scan that came out. It was actually published, the scientific paper was published in August of 2022. I'm going to read it right now. It's called, the paper's Synthetic Aperture Radar Doppler Tomography Reveals Details of Undiscovered High-Resolution Internal Structure of the Great Pyramid of Giza. Now, that's a mouthful.
It is.
But you feel it's fairly significant, and I want to know why. When was the scan done? Talk about the technology that actually produced the scan.
Yeah. This is satellite scan. It's an orbit that crosses the poles, the north okay. and the south pole. Most people, when they hear satellite, they think equator in that direction of the Earth, but this is a different sort of orbit. And the type of scan that it is that the satellite for a frame of time, and we're talking about something like 12 to 15 seconds, scans, in this particular scan, a certain spot on the Earth, okay? Mm-hmm. And so it collects, it shoots out a beam, the beam comes back from the Earth, and the satellite collects that signal as it comes back.
Sure.
And because you are scanning for a frame of time, you're basically creating a large antenna. And that's why it's called a synthetic antenna, because it's not a physical antenna that's gigantically spread over 15 seconds of satellite movement. It's a synthetic aperture because the satellite is obviously a smaller apparatus. And as it moves across, it keeps collecting the data. So you're creating a synthetic aperture.
Okay, so I want to stop you real quickly. Who owns the satellite? Is this a geological satellite, USGA?
This is, in this particular paper, it's an Italian team, and the satellite is operated by the European Space Agency.
Oh.
Yeah. So they're operating the satellite, and they allowed this Italian team, there's two researchers, Filippo Biondi and Corrado Malanga, the latter of which is actually an ancient civilization researcher. So he's interested in the Great Pyramid.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And he sort of teamed up with this geophysicist or, you know, electrical engineer, Filippo Biondi, and they collaborated on this paper. It's a very technical paper, obviously, and I by no means want to claim that I can do the math. I've read the paper probably 10 times, and I did put a video out on my YouTube channel just to kind of explain the general idea as far as I understand it. Now, I do have a science background, so I am reasonably comfortable with science papers, so I can at least get the gist of it and pass it on to people that, you know, that feel intimidated by things like this.
Well, I mean, there's equations that yes. I was looking at that are just off the chart.
That's right.
And I
will explain that.
Okay.
Yeah. So one set of equations is first of all, what they have to do is they want to describe in mathematical ways what the geometry of the scan actually is and what it is that they are sensing.
Right.
Right. And so I should maybe mention this right away so that people understand how this actually works. So what they are looking for is a tiny shiver. It's a tiny movement on the surface of that spot that they're scanning. And in this case, it's the pyramids. So they're looking for these tiny shivers, and those shivers are a proxy of spaces underneath the surface, okay? Mm-hmm. So you have to imagine the Earth is moving. In this case, what they're saying is there's the wind, there's Cairo, it's a big city, there's seismic movements going on. And those movements get amplified when they traverse a space under the Earth. Hmm. And we're talking about spaces that could be down to up to a mile, 2 miles even. This is what they're saying they can do. But in this particular case, we're talking about spaces inside of the Great Pyramid. So when the wave goes through a space like that, this seismic movement amplifies. And it is that amplification then is detected at the surface above as this tiny little shiver. Imagine you take a piece of paper, put it on a layer of the Great Pyramid, and it trembles. That tiny little...
I've never heard this before, because there's not noticeable earth. This is not an earthquake.
No.
This is you're talking about almost like the earth is breathing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it's a Gaia
that's
effect,
right. Yeah.
is what this is capturing.
That's correct. Okay. They're attributing this actually to motions that are generated by the city of Cairo to some degree.
Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, you have 30 million people or more, even 50, I don't know at this point, cars driving, right? And so all of this combined motion is transmitted throughout the Cairo area, including the Giza Plateau.
I never heard this before.
Yeah, this is what they're saying in the paper. And so, but the good thing about, so I'll just cut to the chase, they do have a positive control. In science, you need, when you do an experiment, you have a phenomenon, you have to have controls, negative, positive control.
Right.
And the most important control in this paper that they're detecting the spaces that we know. We know the King Chamber, we know the Queen Chamber, we know the Subterranean Chamber, we know the Grand Gallery, we know the shafts coming out of the chambers. So, and we know about the Big Void, and we know about this new...
The more recent one.
All of these spaces are detected with this method. When I saw that, I started getting interested in this.
Okay.
So now I said, now we have something here, because they have a proof of principle.
Yeah.
Right? In addition to all of these spaces, they detected, now hold yourself, 20 more spaces.
Through this new...
Yes.
Okay.
20.
Let me just stop you real quick, Manu. Was their goal to find additional spaces, or was their goal just to see what, using this new technology, what they could see
yeah.
With the scan.
Yeah. So I think the mindset is they knew about the muon experiments. Of course, you know, the muon experiments is a way to...
That's the scan pyramid.
The scan pyramid project, right.
Yeah.
And so that is the way that, you know, we've been quote-unquote X-raying the Great Pyramid.
Within it.
Within it, yeah. Yeah. And so we know that we therefore know, based on muon experimentation, that there is a big void and that there's that little... That the one that you just referred to, that chamber at the entry.
Yeah.
And so what they wanted to know is, can they first of all detect those same spaces with this new method? And this method, I should also add, has been used, for example, to detect voids inside of volcanoes.
Oh.
It has been used to detect failures inside of ships, large military ships, for example, cracks in the metal. It has been used to detect cracks in a dam in Iraq, for example.
Wow.
And this is all the work of, in part, of Filippo Biondi. So the method has been applied to in other contexts. And so they wanted to now test it in this archaeological context, because obviously it will bring in a lot of attention. And what they're ultimately interested in is marketing this sort of technology and making money with it. This is my hunch from, you know, my impression from reading the paper.
Okay.
So anyways, to get back to your question. So they wanted to see if they can confirm those spaces that were already detected with muography. Mm-hmm. And they must have been surprising themselves, because when they did the experiment, they come up with that and so much more. So... I mean, Cliff, I have to say, you know, Jean-Paul Bouval and I, we have been working on trying to come up with a back of the envelope way how the whole interior architecture could have been designed. We worked on this for 2 years. We put out a paper. We made a video on it, and we thought we had it. And then this paper comes out, and we're both, oh my goodness, everything down the drain, because we didn't think about. But one interesting thing is Jean-Paul Bouval always predicted that there would be a straight corridor leading to the Queen Chamber, a continuation of the corridor that we already know, all the way to the outer wall.
Okay.
And that void that you just mentioned, the one that we recently scoped, right?
So it's above the original the entrance.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah.
So Jean-Paul and also other people have always thought that there should be such a connecting corridor. And at least that also was confirmed now. So we know there is such a corridor.
Okay.
I should also add that the muography cannot detect these corridors. So for example, in the Bent Pyramid, muography was used to, that's where it was put to a test initially. They were able to detect these corbel chambers because they're large.
Yeah.
But they did not connect, they could not detect the connecting corridors. So that's the limit of detection for muography.
Yeah.
But this method can detect these
corridors.
It's
so amazing, Manu. When I was looking at this scientific paper, I was like, how in the hell did they pierce the stone from the top of this pyramid to the very base and find how many total?
So that's a great question. It's not piercing, right? So
what is it?
Yeah, I will explain it. So the satellite emits a chirp. A chirp is just like what whales do. They go like that, right? So I'm trying to imitate it. So it's like a whistle that changes its pitch.
Okay.
And it's a sampling. Right. So they send out a whole bunch of frequencies to see which one of those frequencies will bounce back.
Frequencies?
Yeah. Different, like a different frequency of tone.
So a satellite is emitting?
It's a chirp. Right. So it's not
technology.
So it's not LIDAR. There's actually somebody asked me that question yesterday. Well, why didn't they just use LIDAR?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was in the middle of other things and I couldn't, you know, I wasn't thinking about the correct answer.
Yeah.
But the correct answer, the question is great. LIDAR is a laser. A laser is monofrequentic, if that's a word, or monofrequency. It's one frequency of light.
Right.
This is a chirp. So the satellite is emitting a band of frequencies around 10 gigahertz. So it's in the microwave range. Mm-hmm. And that band is 400 megahertz wide. Okay. So, and all of those frequencies are sent down, and then whatever comes back is collected and then, you know, sent.
They create an image from that.
And so now, If something moves during the scan period, then there's going to be what's called a Doppler shift. You probably know this if you've ever been pulled over by the cops for speeding, which I have, guilty as charged.
Okay. A while ago.
Yeah. That's how they know how fast you're going, because they're shooting radar at you, at your car. The radar comes back, but there's a shift in the frequency. You can hear this when the ambulance is leaving you or coming back, right?
Yeah.
I know it's bad, my imitation, but I'm just trying to explain the concept, right? So it's the same idea, right? So when something is moving away from you, the frequency will be lowered that comes back. And if it's coming at you, it's going to be a higher frequency, right?
Okay.
So they can detect motion, and the motion that they're detecting, which, well, I want to go back to what you're saying about piercing. The motion they're detecting is just at the surface of the Great Pyramid, and they're looking for this little shiver. That motion is what they're detecting with the frequency shift.
Okay.
And if the shiver is greater, then that means there is a space underneath where there's resonance that's being amplified. And that resonance again comes from seismic activity underground. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what they're detecting. When I saw this at the beginning, again, I thought this is not possible. How can you detect a tiny little shiver like that from 600 miles up in the air?
Yeah, it's mind blowing. Yeah. What they're able to do with this with satellite.
Yeah, but apparently it is possible to do this.
Okay.
So if you look at the end of the paper and skipping all of the formulas, right? So the hard part of this is the signal processing. It's actually not that difficult to get a satellite imagery. It is, of course, not easy as a regular person to get security clearance to get a full aperture. You and I would not be able to do that. I was able to get a satellite image of the Giza Plateau easily from Capella Space Corporation in San Francisco. They were very nice. They said, okay, here is an image. We took it a couple of years ago. Just give us credit for it, which I'm hereby doing. Thanks to them.
Oh, wonderful.
Capella Space. Yeah.
Yeah.
They sent me exactly the same type of image. However, it's a much shorter aperture. Okay. Can you repeat the experiment with that? We're currently working on it. This is with Rob Nayland and Ed Biegert. We're trying to apply this to the Great Sphinx, but we're not there yet. So I don't have any news for you today. But the Italians had the full aperture at their disposal. So they got a special permission from the European Space Agency. And so what they did now is the hard part is to filter out that tiny signal, the Doppler signal that comes from that shivering surface around the Great Pyramid. And the way you filter that is described with those formulas. The problem is that they didn't give us the secret sauce. A lot of it is there mathematically, but some of it is missing. Some of it, you don't have all the ingredients in order to replicate the experiment. So this was a little bit of my critique of the paper, which I put into the video. The other problem I had with the paper was the Egyptological aspect of it. So I'm definitely not putting my stamp of approval on Malanga's take on the data. He could be right, he could be wrong, but I can't really
comment. What does he say?
Well, he has a theory about pyramid construction, has to do with water, but I didn't want to focus on it because that's his theory. And, you know, I didn't look into it. I was more interested in the technical side because of the spaces.
Yeah.
And so maybe we should talk about that.
That's what I want to talk about. Yeah. So I was just, I just came back from our annual tour, ended at mid-May, was in the King, Queen. I didn't go to the subterranean chamber. But those are the spaces we know of, not including the star shafts that are also noted. These new chambers that have been uncovered are below that and above that. Why don't you start with the higher level chambers and give us a sense of their size and what you speculate or perhaps hypothesize may be. Are they relieving chambers? Are they chambers in the same configuration as the King and Queen chambers? They're there now.
Yes.
They're valid.
Yes.
In a minute, I also want to talk about what the the antiquities departments are thinking, because we know what the problem
that's going to be. Yet another entertaining layer.
We'll get into that in a minute because I have a real problem with that whole. But I want to hear what you were able to extract from the graphs that they provided in this scientific paper.
Well, I when I first looked at the computer design of what they're detecting, right? They plotted it in 3D. They used a computer-assisted design software. And initially, it's bewildering because you see all these boxes and rectangles and yellow connections, and you just don't know what's where. And so that's why you have to spend time with the paper. And I decided to do that, you know, to help other people to sift through that morass. First of all, I think it's useful to find the structures that we know, which is what you were just asking, right? So the King chamber is there.
Yeah.
Then there is a big green box, I believe it. I don't have the image in front of me right now, but there's a big green box. It's a little bit off to the north compared to what we thought the big void is located.
Oh, the one that they found with the scan pyramid group.
That's correct. Yeah, that's right. So the position is a little bit more north. But the size of it is about, I would say, correct.
Interesting. So
Yeah. So it's about right, I would say.
Yeah.
He has actually a figure where they estimate the distance, the dimensions of all of these voids in meters. And so I believe it's something like 70. Quote wrongly, but I'm just guessing off the top of my head, 17 meters by 6 meters, something like that. For that big green
void. Big one. Yeah. So that's an accurate size that we didn't have before. I don't think Scan Pyramid came up with specific size. It was all fuzzy.
Yeah, this is more granular.
Okay,
yeah.
So give us the feet on that.
Yeah, that's right. So the what they're saying in their paper is that their level of resolution is about a meter. So they can resolve to down to about a meter.
Okay.
Accuracy. So we have this big void, and then the big void, which is what we didn't know, is connected by these small little, what I suppose are corridors, to the King, forward to the King chamber. Oh. When I say forward, I mean south. Now we're going south up in that level that you ask about. And then what happens is that these two corridors connect to a square-like corridor that surrounds the King chamber. So you imagine the King chamber, surrounding it is a frame of four corridors, like a square, and that square is connected to this big void via two more corridors.
Wow.
So that's sort of the skeleton of this upper portion.
And let me stop you real quickly. You've read Chris Dunn's book.
I'm going to get into that in a moment. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
He talks about it being a machine that delivers hydrogen. This could be the delivery system.
Yes, you are leaping ahead. Yes.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
No, because no worries. That it's your question. Yes. So let's get to that if you want. Okay.
Wait a minute. Let's finish with your showing this void that until now was fuzzy.
Yeah. Because there's more. So that's the upper. And then behind now south of the square that surrounds the King chamber is a massive transverse corridor going east-west. So this is now past the King chamber to the south.
Wow.
That massive corridor then connects to two massive step-like corridors that go down like a wishbone. And that yet again turns and turns into the earth under the Great Pyramid. That blew my mind when
Wait a minute.
That.
It goes all the way down to the subterranean chamber?
Below.
Below that.
Yeah. It goes down below the subterranean
chamber. And just stops?
And then the signal fades away.
So we don't know the exact...
Yeah, so it reminds... I don't know if wishbone is the right way to describe it, but it reminds me of something that is sensing the earth and transmitting it up to that level where the King chamber is via those two turns.
This is very exciting.
Yeah. Now, and then what is even more amazing, they have these little trusses that connect those two massive wishbone-like corridors to the square that I just mentioned that surrounds the King chamber. These little trussing, so they were able to detect that too. I mean, what's the size of it based on, if you look at it visually, I would say maybe a meter, maybe just under a meter. I mean, obviously they were detecting it, so it means that their level of sensitivity was high enough that they could see it. Now, we're not done yet. It gets even more crazy. So that's the, so this is the main skeleton of what they're finding. They found 20 structures. They're calling them tags. And they've numbered all of these tags.
So like, you just started at the very top.
Yeah, and I'm moving down into the earth.
Which is good.
Yes.
So you just explained the configuration of what we thought was just a void, now is an actual room with corridors surrounding and then descending its, yeah, its space. So go ahead.
And then it goes into the earth.
Right.
And then while we're at the earth, there is a massive corridor on the north side that crosses underneath the Great Pyramid, and from that massive corridor, little site corridors emanate. So it's kind of like reminiscent of a magazine in ancient Egypt. I don't know if you've seen these underground tombs, but let's say the tomb system under the Step Pyramid or under the Unas Pyramid, there's a Second Dynasty tomb system, and there's a lot of these corridors that connect those to these side corridors, and that's called a magazine. Mm-hmm. So that structure reminded me of a magazine. Of course, we didn't know it existed. According to them, there's this gigantic magazine underneath the Great Pyramid. And now, here's the hammer. There is a chamber underneath the queen chamber. Yes, and it leads to a corridor that descends further south and then to yet another chamber. So, and that is exciting because there have been investigators that predicted this, that there is something under the queen chamber, they think there is the burial, Khufu might be there, who knows what, but they predicted that there could be such a chamber, and lo and behold, they are finding, the Italian team found just that.
Oh, this is very, very exciting.
So this is just in a nutshell. This is what I don't have this in front of me, so you have to excuse me. I'm just going on rote memory, but
yeah.
I've looked at this so many times, so I've kind of sort of imaged my head to try to, rekindle this right now for memory. My first impression, and this is always the most important impression, like what do you think first when you processed all
first
of this?
First impression.
Right. Yeah, my head was smoking. Okay. I'm going, this will throw everything we thought we know out of the door, out of the window, everything. All the theories about the Great, that's why when I was sitting, when Johnny Enoch asked yesterday, what do you think about the Great Pyramid? What was it for? I'm going, the question is, we forget about everything we heard. There's no answer to your question because we have to start over again.
Did Enoch ask you about the white paper?
No, he asked about the function of the Great Pyramid.
Oh, the function.
Yeah,
okay.
He asked, so Manu, you've been, to Egypt many times, so what do you think the Great Pyramid is for? And that's when I brought up this paper.
Yeah.
I said, well, I thought I had at least a smidgen of an idea, and it's out the door now at this point because we have so much more. If they are correct, that the Italian team, if they are correct about this, then we're dealing with something that is, there's nothing like it. And that means Robert Bouval was correct in Cosmic Womb. It's an anomaly. The Great Pyramid is not a normal pyramid.
We're going to take a short commercial break to allow our sponsors to identify themselves. And we will quickly return with Manu Seisadei describing this new technology and the revelations on the Great Pyramid. We'll be right back. We're speaking with Dr. Manu Seisadei and his revelations from a scientific paper that was published in August of last year, highlighting a new scan that was used on the Great Pyramid and some new rooms, some shafts, really evidence of a machine in this paper that was released to the general public.
Okay, so let's talk Chris Dunn real quick.
Yeah.
Dunn hypothesized that there were relieving chambers, there was hydrogen. He thinks it was an engine. You're describing tunnels and channels in and out and around, like water was. We've always known that the Giza Plateau has tons of underground canals.
Yes.
Bringing water into the pyramid, perhaps underneath the Sphinx. We don't know what the Sphinx purpose was other than just being a giant sculpture. But is your feeling that perhaps these new chambers brought water, brought hydrogen, brought elements into the body of the Great Pyramid and were combusted or whatever? What's your feeling about Christian's theory?
Yeah, so this is why I wanted to tell you what my first impression is. And I'm saying this as a complete amateur. I don't want to speak for Chris's theory. I'm only commenting my understanding of what he's saying. But my first impression is, and I will tell you this, my first impression, this is wind in Christopher Dunn's sail. This new thing. That was my, and I put this on my Facebook page and he saw it. And he liked the comment. And I'll tell you why I'm saying this. So my understanding of Chris's theory is that he envisioned the Grand Gallery as an amplification system of Earth seismic movements, right?
Acoustic waves.
Basically, he said that the Great Pyramid is harvesting moving waves into standing waves. So that's the first process. Like you have waves that are moving through the Giza Plateau, and the Great Pyramid allows these waves to become vertical excursions. So it's called a standing wave. And that energy of that seismic wave that's now in place is amplified in the Grand Gallery by what's called a Helmholtz resonator. What is that? It's basically a collection of spheres that are increasingly smaller. And these devices were, according to Chris Dunn, inserted into these spaces that you see in the
Grand Gallery. Oh, as you're going up the Grand Gallery?
Yeah, that is his theory, right? So, and in these spheres, they sample the movement of the air, this rhythmic, seismic movement of the air. And when the frequency is right, the certain size sphere will resonate and it will amplify the signal all the way up to the King Chamber. That energy then is what catalyzes the reaction that he's envisioning with the hydrogen, you know, with the chemicals coming out of the shafts, et cetera, et cetera. So when I saw this chamber system that the Italian team published, I thought to myself, you know what? In a way, Christopher Dunn predicted this functionality of a wave amplifier, and he may have been incorrect about the Helmholtz idea, mm-hmm. but the idea could be correct. And how? Why? Because this wishbone-like structure could be what is harvesting this seismic movement up into the square-like structure. And it's kind of like, let me see if I can, it's difficult for me to express it in words, but let me see if I can demonstrate it. So if this is the wishbone structure and it's moving like this, imagine this square is suspended with these trusses, right? And it starts moving faster. And the King Chamber is right in the middle, right? So it's a resonance amplifier. It amplifies a certain movement of the air inside of this wishbone-like corridor. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's wind in his sails, because he, in principle, he was correct that there's a need for an amplifier. Maybe it wasn't in the Grand Gallery, but maybe it is this structure that acts like an amplifier potentially.
Right. And the thing with Chris's final conclusion was that at some point there was a way to connect and get the energy from the pyramid and use it to perhaps drive machines, devices, whatever, in the surrounding Giza area. These tunnels you're talking about that go underground, if we were able to scan the with radar the surface of the Giza Plateau, we may find the openings to these channels that right. have been detected.
That's right. Probe it. I mean, to confirm what, for example, that structure that's underneath the Great Pyramid, it's actually extruding beyond the perimeter of the Great Pyramid. So you could actually fairly easily probe that area without destroying, without making a hole into the pyramid to see if they're correct about that space.
Yeah.
I also want to say is that I'm perfectly aware of the fact that the model that Christopher Dunn is proposing is not maybe the most plausible model that would most people would say applies
to the pyramid. It's pretty raw.
But it is a scientific model in the sense that he's using all the observations and he's constructed a model based on those observations. And Chris is really good at doing that.
Yeah.
And he is completely unanchored from conventional thinking, which is great. This is exactly what we need in free science. We need people that are able to think out of the box, even if they're wrong. And so it doesn't matter if there's a high chance that he may still be, he may be wrong about what he's saying.
He's giving it a shot.
He's giving it a shot, and he is very meticulous and he's very rigorous about applying observations and constructing a model. And that's why I admire him. He's really good at that. And, you know, his model makes predictions that can be tested. And, you know, you should ask him when you get him on the show. Ask
his new book comes out in
September.
The fall.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's going to incorporate the new data into his.
I don't know if he has time.
No, he did. I think he
I
think he edited the book after the paper came out because he said something. I remember him saying something on the Facebook page where this was posted that it.
Oh, he has more to come.
I got the impression from it that he will make some, he had to edit the book based on the new findings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you, in your brief view of this, your analysis, would you say these corridors are pumping and distributing fluids, air, hydrogen? Well, I mean, I'm guessing that that's what Chris talks about. But it seems to me that these are relieving chambers and this is a system, this is a machine.
Yes.
This is proving Chris Dunn's theory that this Great Pyramid is some form of a machine of a great advanced nature.
Yeah, let's put it this way. I think it makes his model even more tangible. But let me give you another model, okay? Let's say the machine-like character that you're sensing from the description, right? Maybe that's the machinery required to build a pyramid.
Hmm.
Maybe. But then, of course, you have to ask, well, does that machinery also exist in the other pyramids? And we won't know until they publish the next paper, which is going to be about the second pyramid. It is coming.
Oh, is that... they're doing the...
it is coming, yes. This is Great Pyramid. The second pyramid, which is attributed to Khafre, is now also, they do the same analysis on that.
Oh my God.
So if they
great.
If they can see the same sort of thing inside of the Khafre pyramid, then it gets interesting.
Okay? Wow.
Because then maybe we do have something here that has to do with construction, right? So in other words, these corridors are ramps, internal ramps that are used to, up to a certain point, build the pyramid. You know, leveraging devices. I have no idea, but I'm just trying to open the discussion so that we're not just focused on one model.
Yeah.
In science, you try to create as many models as possible that can explain all the observations. And then what you have to do is vet the models through a falsification exercise.
I've never been into the Khafre pyramid.
Yeah.
And maybe you have, but
yes.
It doesn't seem like it has the same configuration.
It doesn't seem like it, right. So, but of course, we didn't think that the Great Pyramid has all of this.
Oh, God.
So the only way to know is by scanning it like they have for the first pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
My hunch is, and this is just a speculation, is that the Great Pyramid is unique in this respect. I don't think, I'm agreeing with you, I don't think that the Second Pyramid will show all of that. Mm-hmm. However, there's an interesting little bit of history. When Alvarez Muon scanned Khafre's pyramid with a team, this was, I think, the late 60s. You know, this is the same Alvarez who proposed the KT boundary. Meteorite strike 65 million years ago, the one that Graham referred to yesterday.
Yeah.
He showed a picture actually of the senior Alvarez. So this is the same scientist who scanned the second pyramid, and they initially thought, if you look at the paper, they initially thought there was a space up higher in Khafre's pyramid.
Oh.
Yeah. But then they dismissed it as a false signal.
Hmm.
Now, it would be interesting to see, and we will know this soon when the scan of the second pyramid comes out, if they were correct about that, if that is actually a space in Khafre's pyramid. So it's going to be a great year, Cliff. And next year...
Well, my next question to you is, will the Italians refine this research, this data, so it's more palatable to the general public? And my next question to you, how do the authorities react to this? Because this throws the tomb idea right out the window. And you know that people like Zahi Hawass live by the old, you know, mm-hmm. methods and the old theories of yeah. Great Pyramid.
Yeah. Well, I think they want to probably make some money with this. Maybe that's why my impression is that there's a secret sauce maybe missing here. I think that this, you don't need a permission from Egypt to do this experiment because you're not putting your foot on Egyptian soil.
Let me just stop you real quickly. Uh-huh. They didn't need any permission to scan the pyramid from space?
No.
Because typically this is a big deal to them.
Yeah.
You're intruding in our space.
Yes.
And you're publishing data without us approving.
Yes.
We know where that goes.
Yes. No, I agree. But legally speaking, I'm saying international law does not, to my knowledge, okay, does not prohibit them from flying a satellite over Egypt or any other place in the world from 600 miles in the air, and or is it maybe 400 miles? It may be 400 and 600
Very
kilometers.
High up.
Yeah. And collecting data and processing them. The main ceiling here is, you know, is intelligence agencies prohibit commercial users or, you know, people like you and I from getting down to a certain amount of resolution. And you know, and I know because when I asked for the scans, the Capella people said, you know, you can have this much of an aperture, but not more than that. I said, fine, no worries. It's such a striking, the data are so striking that I think Egypt was caught short, flat-footed on this one, which is why they haven't said anything in public.
So they do know about this.
They must know about it.
We haven't heard a reaction.
I haven't heard anything.
And no. I'm going to be as gentle as I can with what I'm about to say is they are a little restrictive in allowing others outside of their own country from doing this type
right.
of work
right.
without lots of money paid to them,
right.
without a lot of paperwork,
right.
and without a lot of restriction.
Right.
So,
well, let me take.
That's why I want you to talk about this
yes.
because
yes.
this is going to be a big deal to them when a scientific team reveals that this is a machine that we're showing had a function thousands of years ago, and that their belief that this is a tomb is thrown out the window.
Yeah, let me put myself in their shoes, if that's even possible. But I think I totally understand that this is a threat to any country when you can scan from the sky down to a level of underground spaces.
Yeah.
So you have to look at it that way. It's not about the science of archaeology in this case. It has military implications.
That is true.
It threatens national security in Egypt. So I am not surprised that they have not said anything. I'm sure they're looking at the data. They're looking at the technology. And of course, other countries, intelligence agencies, they're all looking at this now. How can we use this? And I definitely do not want to get involved with that. I think the good way out of this is to find out how they did it in a simple way, publish it so that everybody has access to it, so that it's not sequestered away just to special agencies and military, whatever application, but that it can be used in this form for archaeology, for scientific purposes.
And I love that solution that you're offering. I would definitely think that National Geographic,
yes,
the Smithsonian Institute magazine would consider this, but this raises huge questions about the whole theory of dynastic Egypt.
Right.
I want your opinion about the possibilities of this advancing our thoughts of who perhaps the pre-dynastics were and perhaps the technology. This is a technological revolution we're looking at. And you cannot hold to the old beliefs that this is a tomb, that the pharaohs were, I mean, we know they were big into the death cults and things like that, but the Great Pyramid is now revealed when this information is published to the great the general public, that this is a machine. So talk a little bit about what you think would be the effect.
I think, like I said before, I think it's important to not immediately focus this down into just one model. I think it's important to stay open and come up with several models that can explain what we're seeing here. And then put your heads together and see how we could sort this out. Like, what's the model that survives?
But don't you think there's going to be resistance from the Egyptological community?
Of course.
This is a fake. This is not.
Yes.
This discovery doesn't make sense to us.
Right.
And the data must be wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if they'll go that far.
Yeah.
But just because of what we've been dealing with this cover up of this great technological civilization that built this thing.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. It's the problem is that there's not probably just one reason why they seem to be stonewalling this. There may be multiple reasons. It has to do with money coming into the country. It has to do with keeping the peace between the different ideologies, religions. It has to do, and then the science comes in, and then mystery sells, right? And then
What you're saying is maybe this is going to open a can of worms.
It opens a can of
because
worms.
Because who knows what else they're suppressing.
That's right. And then there is, on top of all of that, So ideology, money, tourism, right? All of these things.
And pure science,
yeah. And then, this is what I was going to say. They want to control the flow of information.
Yes.
Right? And I mean, it's who am I to tell them what they're allowed to release and not? I come at this as a purely from a scientific interest. I'm just as fascinated as you are. And if somebody tells me, okay, Manu, you can study this up to this point and then you can't cross this line, then I have to say, okay, fine. I'll walk up to this line and then I walk away.
See, that's the problem, though. I've seen that kind of data. I mean, when your book, Under the Sphinx, proposes a great deal of radical thinking that I bet the authorities were upset about.
Well, I'm using Egyptological relics, writing, right? So they were always criticizing our side, saying that, okay, you're pointing to geology, you're using astronomy, you want to tell us, you know when the Sphinx was made, but you're not taking into consideration what we've come up with. Mm-hmm. And I took them by their word. I said, fine, I agree with you. Let's look at the Egyptological evidence, but then look at what you have in your backyard. What about that, right? What about this wooden plate that shows a lioness in front of a temple? Yeah. How big is this lioness? Is this a real lioness or is it a statue? What about Mehit? What about the jaw sign, right? What about the pyramid texts that talk about, you know, that invocate a Sphinx statue? This is what I'm going to talk about today in my workshop, by the way. And there's all this stuff that they had in your backyard. They just interpreted it in a different way based on the idea that the Sphinx is only 4,500 years old.
Yeah.
So, and of course, in order to falsify what I'm saying, I think the best test is to drill into anomaly A, the space that Robert Schoch and Thomas DeBakey detected. And if there is no space, then I will walk away from this saying, okay, model falsified. Fine. That's how science works. Yeah. I'm not insisting that I'm correct. I just want progress, just like you. That's what you're complaining about. You're saying they're stonewalling and not allowing.
We're in the dark ages with.
Yeah.
I mean, they do not allow ground penetrating radar.
Yes.
What the hell is that about?
Yeah.
You guys, I was at the Hathor Temple and they have found a new crypt, the fifth crypt. Next to this crypt is the columns of a underground temple.
Mm-hmm.
We have never seen any evidence other than what we see when we excavate to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they scan underneath that and find out what's there?
It depends on who does it. I mean, if Manu Seifzadeh proposes to scan, they're going to say, Manu Seifzadeh, you're not part of a university. There's no grant money, right? Who's your supervising professor? And I'm saying, okay, you're right. I am not an academic, so fine. If you don't want to give the project to me, give it to someone from Cairo University, from Helwan University. Let your own people do the work. Now, I do know, actually, I have a couple of acquaintances in Egypt that are archaeologists, they're great people, and they are currently working on some fascinating projects that we don't know about yet in public. So there is some movement, you know.
But is it revelatory as this satellite imagery?
Yeah, well,
I think this is radical information.
It is radical, yes.
That takes us really to the front. I mean,
That's why I want to figure this out, how it's done, and publish it, the whole thing, without the secret sauce. With the secret sauce.
Everything in it. You take the Italians' work and publish your own?
Yes, so that they can use it themselves.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, I am perfectly, if we can be smart enough to figure this out, I'd be more than happy to give it to them, to give it to Egypt. Here it is. You use it, your own people use it. I don't have to be involved. It's not necessary.
I guess what I would like to get more information about, and I'm interested in your opinion, the Egyptian authorities, the Antiquities Department, is decades behind the time. Decades. They're still bringing out mummies from Saqqara thinking that's a big deal. I was in a crypt last year with the head of Antiquities, Mustafa, and that was a big deal. I was like, so what? That's what's going on for. I want to see how these things were built. This new data is radical, and it's given us a sense of not only the technology, but perhaps how this pyramid worked.
I think what you have to do in order to understand this is look at tourism numbers as a function of these announcements. That's
tourism
the data
numbers.
You need. Yeah, that's what you need, because they have, you know, the statisticians, God. I'm pretty sure, have worked this out, that every time a mummy is discovered, there's a blip in terms of, dollars flowing into the country. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to understand, they're using, this is a major source of GDP.
Yeah.
It's something like 10 to 15% of Egypt's GDP, which runs about $300 billion a year right now, or 350 at this point. And so when everything they do, I'm pretty sure there is mathematics, like numbers behind it, economic numbers. So to us, it seems trivial. Okay. Yet another mummy. We've unearthed this sarcophagus, whatever. But besides the science of it, which I'm sure there's interest in that, but there's also the government is funding this research because there is a dividend that comes out of it.
Yeah.
To us, we think, oh my God, the big pyramid, the Sphinx, right? Those are the big ticket items. That's worth maybe billions in income, right? And so they're slow pacing that. Because that, you know, why would you release all of that information and then it's done, mystery is gone. And then what they're worried about is that's the end of...
And I hear what you're saying, but what's going on with the $1 billion museum that's been delayed by 5 years?
Yeah.
Five years.
Yes.
It could be $100 million in revenues, you know, anyhow.
Yeah, well, there's politics behind it, you know. And again, I can't speak for the Egyptian government. My hunch is that it has to do with political leaders. They're all going to be invited. Like, did you know that Jill Biden was at the Sphinx a couple of days ago?
No.
Yeah. She was at the Sphinx just a day or two.
Jill Biden was in Egypt?
Yeah.
Wow.
So what they want is, I'm speculating, is the major world leaders to all come to Cairo and see this thing open up. And right now, that's just not possible. Can you get Putin to Cairo right now? Putin is busy.
He's unwanted.
He's unwanted or busy, right? So it may have to do with politics. Wow. Politics means money, right?
Yeah.
It's about money.
Wow. Manu Seifzadeh, great to see you. Wonderful as always. Thank you for this analysis. How can people get a hold of you? Give us your website.
The website is shut down. Best things to follow on Facebook. For the papers, I have an academia page. It's academia.edu. Just search for my name and all.
Oh, and by the way, this paper is on your Facebook page?
It's on the YouTube channel.
Oh, YouTube.
So I also
channel.
Have a YouTube channel, and on the YouTube channel, I spent about an hour going through some of the same things that you and I just went through.
Okay. Mm-hmm. For those of you listening, I think what I'll do is put this paper by the Italians on my Facebook page. Go to Earth Ancients, go to Facebook, either international or the group page, and you'll see it there. Hey, Manu, as always, great. Any new books we can look forward to seeing soon?
Under the Sphinx is still running, and okay. the next publication is a big surprise. Can't
Uh-oh,
say it yet.
You can't say.
No, but you don't have to wait that long. Probably September.
Wonderful. Hey,
it's a
always
big
great.
Surprise.
Always great to see you.
Same here. Bye.
Now you got to go to Facebook to see these graphs, and I'm going to put out as many as I can. And the actual scientific paper is available as a PDF, and I'll post that as well. It's probably best that you try to download it so you can see the color variations and some of the depth of these shafts that go way under the pyramid. And we don't know where they end up because the scanning technology only can pierce the surface of the ground to a certain degree. You have to consider what else is missing. This is why there's a great cry for ground penetrating radar and any other surface penetrating technology that's available. The Egyptians just will not do this, and it is infuriating, and it's sad. It's very, 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 very sad. But when you consider the lifestyle, the situation in Egypt, it makes sense because this is what they call a developing country. They're developing. They are grasping at what they can. But when you have a society where there is very, very high illiteracy, this is what happens. And I'm not going to get too critical. That's about as far as I'm going to go. But I think you can tell this is frustrating as hell for me because we are sitting on the edge of revelations of a people that had a high level of technology considered pre-dynastic or earlier. And, you know, unfortunately, as Dr. Karakuni said, Egyptology is dead. Well, if a system or if a so-called study known as Egyptology is dead, it falls on those in archaeology, which is kind of a branch of Egyptology, but it also follows on new researchers, new technology. And this has been a big complaint of mine for years when it comes to general archaeology, is the fact that you got to get engineers in there, you got to get chemists in there. And these two scientists are engineers and a chemist who are looking at this. Malenga is a chemist. So he's curious as to what these chambers are all about that are surrounding the pyramid, surrounding the king's chamber. Chris Dunn theorized over a decade ago that they were hydrogen, these shafts that led into the king's chamber were delivering hydrogen and other chemicals. There was an analysis a while ago on the surface of the chamber of some residual material in the form of a surface feature, which could have been something like a reaction to an explosion or combustion or something. We don't know. But we got to get science in there. We got to keep getting more scientists like this. And the Egyptian authorities just don't like this. And I'm sure they're not happy that this paper was released, but they don't have any control over it. And it may be that something like a LIDAR system is used on a satellite or a plane or something. I guess it can't be in the Egyptian airspace or they're going to have a fit. That it pierces the surface of the ground at the Giza Plateau, and we'll probably find a maze of tunnels, of temples, of other things, in the same capacity that we see the Osirian. Now, if you've ever seen the Osirian, it's about, I think it's 20 feet below the surface. You gotta walk down. It might be more than 20 feet. You gotta walk down into it. But once you get into this this chamber, which is the Osirian, it is mind blowing. It's built with 200 ton square granite, red granite blocks. The roof is heavy duty megalithic stone, and nobody has a clue what it was for. It's very, very, very unusual, and it is no one can explain it. The Egyptologists just say it's one of Seti's buildings, although the Seti I temple sits above it. In fact, you had to go through Seti, the temple, and get down to the Osirian. They don't even look alike. It's like of a different period, a different technology, a different civilization built the Osirian. And for that matter, if you go to the Serapeum in Saqqara, it's the same deal. You go down into the bowels of the earth and you see these gigantic stone, 80-ton blocks of granite carved with such a level of precision, no one knows what it's all about. If you ask an Egyptologist, they'll tell you, well, it was a funeral tomb or something, you know. They just don't know what the hell's going on. And this is becoming the big problem. These guys just don't know. They're just facing obstacles they can't explain. And they just make up stuff. And this also happens in other archaeological finds where they just can't figure it out. So they make something up. And look, let's be fair about this. You know, it's all theory. You know, the dynastics are all, I mean, they're, it's us, it's modern day man that's giving their time of these periods, of these various Egyptian periods. And we don't know. That's why it's always exciting to hear about a potential find of the Hall of Records or a void in the Great Pyramid that could hold records of data. Now, with this new discovery, it looks like this is a complete machine and there is no records. It also makes me pause that when we go into this thing, when we're at our tour and people are doing meditations, you know, it's not made for people. And I had to be perfectly honest, as much as I like going in to see this thing, I always feel a tremendous lack of air. It's always a very, very stale air. They don't pump any air in there, maybe purposefully. And it's not a place I want to stay very long. Some people want to stay there for hours. In fact, I've heard stories of people wanting to stay overnight and get a sense of it. It's not made for people. You shouldn't be going in there. And now that I have this data, I'm going to go in and out with my future groups. Hey, that doesn't mean that those of you who want to come on the tour, and by the way, the tour for 2024 is April 28th through May 8th, 2024. I'll be posting, we'll be talking about it more very quickly. This tour is going to fill up. So if you're interested, send me an email to Earth Ancients. For you, the number four, the letter U at gmail.com, and I'll get you some details. So just think about that. But, you know, hey, we're still going to have people come in. You can go to the King's, the Queen's Chamber, and the Subterranean Chamber. But now that we have this data, it may not be smart to stay in that interior for more than, you know, an hour or more. We get 2 hours of free time without the general public to go into this thing. But, you know, if it's a machine and it was combusting and it was, combusting chemicals, it may not be smart to stay in there. So anyhow, that's my recollection. And it actually also changes those people who are like very deeply spiritual, who feel that, you know, people went in there to do transformations and things like that. That kind of data was likely after the users had passed, the epic was over thousands of years later, they probably came in there and put the statuary and other artifacts that were found or it was used in a certain manner. That's not now. Now that we have this new data, that's not what it was for. The purpose is something else, and we don't know. But fantastic information, just amazing. So great to have Manu tell us about it and see for yourself what it's all about in the diagrams that were produced from this acoustic wave scan in August of 2022. New satellite technology reveals lost pyramid science. That's our program. So I hope you enjoyed it. Hey, if you're enjoying Earth Ancients, please consider becoming a subscriber of Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you can support the work we do here on this program. And I got to tell you, we all love it. Our team loves it. But, you know, we do Earth Ancients, we do Destiny every Wednesday, and then we try to do Earth Ancients Special Edition, The Archives, and we got a good one coming up, by the way, in a couple of weeks on ancient Japanese megaliths. This was recorded in 2015, and we're going to bring it back with some spice, with some new data. This all takes time, takes energy, and your contribution, your subscription really helps us. To become a subscriber, go to Patreon, that's patreon.com/Earth Ancients. Subscribe, the money's taken from your ATM or your credit card. You don't even have to think about it. And it really helps. We got a ton of gifts. I think we're up to 30 ebooks. These are books from our various guests that have donated to the cause. So you got books, and every month I'm uploading a new book. We have unpublished interviews. We have some galleries, and we have a chance to check in with each other when I connect with everybody. So join us. Support Earth Ancients, and to do that, you go to patreon.com/Earth Ancients. So I want to thank the following people who are subscribers in the month of May and June. I want to thank Little Uzi Burt, Vic, Harrison Grieve, Justin Ney, Jane Montgomery, Sandy Burns, and William Seifert. You guys rock. You really do. I really appreciate your support. Thank you. Hey, you might have heard that we have a tour coming up in Mexico. It's our annual Mexico tour. This year it's the Maya of Tabasco and Chiapas. This is with Dr. Edwin Barnhard. You can check out the entire itinerary by going to earthancients.com/tours, T-O-U-R-S. And it's going to be a blast. We're only going to do it for a week. It's November 10th through the 17th. We all meet in Vera Hermosa. And from there, we go to La Venta, to the La Venta Park, which is an outdoor museum. That is some of the most amazing Olmec megalithic art that you'll ever see. So we get to see that. We get to see La Venta, the city. Next day, we get on a bus and we go to Palenque. We go to Palenque for a couple of days, and then we go to Bonapec and some other places. We go to a lot. We see a lot in the time we're there. Ed will be giving us a lecture on some of the art that's found there. And remember, he surveyed Palenque, one of the golden jewels of the ancient Maya. So we're going to see in and out some of the places that aren't available to the general public. It's going to be great. Come out and join us. We're about halfway full. We're going to take 30 people max. And to do that, go to earthancients.com/tours. Come out and join us. You'll have a blast. All right, that's it for this program. I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Manu Sefcovic, and the details on the satellite technology and the revelations of new data on the Great Pyramid. All right, as always, my team of Ruth Thomas, Mark Foster, and everyone who makes this thing happen, you guys rock. All right, take care, be well, and we will talk to you next time.